Hi, Bobby Halton here for our sponsor, Unimac. Hey, Unimac wants to remind you to take care of your crew with the most complete PPE cleaning solution in the industry. With washer extractors built for maximum performance tailored to NFPA 1851 standards, simple record-keeping capabilities, and free training for your entire firehouse, it's no wonder that Unimac is called on by fire crews across the nation.
Learn more at unimac.com/safe solution.
Hey folks, how do you prepare your folks for incident command? Well, on today's episode, we're going to be talking about the blue card system and some of the experiences we've had locally trying to implement it. Might have a few side conversations that'll come to bear too, and all that's coming up on the next edition of Tailboard Talk right after this.
I'm Craig Morgan, singer, dad, and first responder. I know how quickly a house fire can spread. Help shield your family from danger. Take these simple steps to safety.
Replace smoke alarms that are 10 years old. Have fire extinguishers and carbon monoxide alarms on each floor. And practice an escape plan. Now, join me at alarmpledge.com and be a safety hero for your family and the firefighters who'd risk their lives to rescue you.
Simple steps worth singing about.
Welcome to Tailboard Talk with Dane Carley, Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Tailboard Talk for Friday, October 15th. This is Jeff.
It's Craig.
And Chris.
And it's getting cooler up here in the Great White North. It's not cold yet.
No.
By any means, but most of the crops are out of the ground. We're looking for our first hard freeze coming up here in the next 7 days to get rid of the bugs. And we've had a nice warm summer this year.
We had a good run.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, when we look at the last couple of years, 2 years ago, we had a run like this where it stayed really warm late through the fall, and it gets you thinking, all right, this might be an easy winter, and unfortunately, it went the other direction on us, and we had tons of snow and cold. And last year, it was kind of oddly cold earlier in the fall and actually stayed a nice winter. We didn't get a lot of snow. It was a fairly warm winter, so I'm a little bit nervous what this warm late fall is going to bring us.
I heard something the other day. I thought it was kind of interesting, and some of the listeners might not be from the upper Midwest, so might not understand this, but golf courses have been open for 6 straight months. That's a kind of a record.
Up here, that's wow.
That's a crazy for us.
So, yeah, most people are used to being open year-round.
Yeah, so our golf course has been open 6 months, and that is a record for us. So that should tell you where we live.
I've often wondered, how can golf courses here survive on 6 months when they're so much of the rest of the country, they're open year-round.
Yeah.
Taxes.
Tight margins, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, one thing that's kind of been new in Moorhead as of late is we, as a department, are going through blue card training for all of our company officers, all of our chief officers, and some of our aspiring firefighters. And we got into blue card not because we were looking for the perfect incident command system or that we have a particular alliance or goal in mind outside of that. We don't have a good incident command training program, Moorhead Fire, and there aren't a lot of programs out there to choose from.
So that's what Blue Card is a incident command system program.
It is. So
it's, system.
It's designed to try to teach a common and systematic way of organizing a Type 4 or a Type 5 incident. So from single-family residential fires up to your smaller big-box fires, a Target or a warehouse, a small industrial facility. So it's not designed for the larger fires that are going to go over, say, an 8-hour operational period and are not going to require more than a couple dozen resources that I chuckle at because we don't have a couple dozen resources on most of our things. But if you think about 99% of your fires, they fall within that category probably. You know, the most common fires we go to, single-family homes and apartment buildings. And what we have been struggling with it in Moorhead for years is trying to get everybody on the same page about how do we talk, how do we organize our crews, and how do we communicate on the radio with some of the same terminology, so when we hear somebody say this, everybody knows what it means. And there aren't five different ways of saying it. So now when you have a captain inside a fire and he's looking to get ventilation started, you don't have five different ways of saying, hey, I got a fan in my thing, I need to get a backpack and put in the freezer so you can do this thing. And if your term is simply, need ventilation, you understand if we say the same thing all the time and how many different ways are there to ventilate a single family structure fire, that we can have some success there. We can have success in calling things the same thing. We tried some initiatives on our own in the early 2000s that were kind of based on the command training center model that Alan Brutacini and his two sons were doing out in Phoenix back in the day. And for a lot of folks that were looking to try to create a system, they'd send people out there to their CTC to see how things worked, mm-hmm. go through some training classes, and then try to buy digital combustion or fires. There was some other fire product. There were two or three freebies at the time, and half of those programs are gone, to build computer-based simulations in your home department to train on. And we did that to a light degree, and we got some consistency built up, and then some people didn't like the idea of command being in a fixed vehicle, or some people didn't like the idea of putting somebody in a roof sector or a group or a division. Then we had the people who didn't like sectors versus groups and divisions. And slowly our system kind of fell apart, that we couldn't have enough common terminology for all of our officers to buy into. And at the time, we didn't have a strong enough head of the organization to say, we have to pick one way to go on this. This is the way. You don't have to like it, but you have to do it, because we all have to talk the same way. And we can get by and revise things in a year or two, but get this in place. And so over 10 years, it's kind of fallen back to the point that everybody does something different.
So this blue card system, is it not the Brunicini? When I hear blue card, I think of the Brunicini system.
Right.
Yeah. It is the Brunicini system.
Okay.
Some things have changed from the early 2000s. So there were two big competing incident command systems at the time. Fireground Command, that was started by Alan Brunicini, and then the Incident Command System, which came out of FireScope out of California, got adopted by FEMA and the U.S. Fire Administration, probably by the U.S. Forest Service first, actually, and then became the national standard after 9/11. And we really had to follow NIMS and ICS for a lot of federal funding and federal programs and stuff. And there isn't anything substantially wrong with either system, in my opinion. They both have a few little pros and cons, but for the most part, you have an adequate span of control on a fireground scene, enough commanders for the resources that are there. And the terminology used to be a little bit different. Now, Blue Card has adopted NIMS-based terminology in addition to their own terminology. So now you can call something a sector or a division or a group. So that way they don't tick off the people who still want to do sectors, and they can pull in the people who do groups or divisions. But you pick locally what you want to do. So for us, we're doing groups and divisions.
Sure.
And actually, more often than not, we're doing functional assignments at a small type 4 or 5 level. You're gonna do fire attack on the first floor. And
sure.
We don't typically do, you're going to be Division 1 and have all the functions of Division 1. If you're just one engine, we send you into the first floor with a line to do fire attack. You know what you're going to do. You're going to do fire attack, search and rescue, primary search, all of that, without getting as nitpicky as you would if you had a very large incident where you do have to name out the specific functions. But in any event, that system now incorporates NIMS-based terminology, and there have been a few other things that have morphed over time to try to build some efficiencies into it. But you go through a system of several incidents and exercises, so you end up getting probably about 40 or 50 reps in several things over the course of 3 days. And this is phase two, but what I should back up to say, you go through 20 hours of online training to go through some basics about fire ground management and the functions that you have to perform out on the fire ground. So you have the same base of not quite tactics and strategy, but just the things that you have to do with fire suppression, search, ventilation, setting up command and naming it, terminating command, transferring command from one commander to the next. And then after the online portion, you need to go through hands-on training with simulators. They're incidents that are based on iPads that you have set up in front of you, and you start doing seen size ups as a whole group or as individuals in small group settings, and then you move to a more complex scenario where you'll arrive at the structure with a fire, and the first arriving unit has a unique screen that they will see with pictures of what they see upon arrival. And then, you know, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to hook into a water supply if the second in engine doesn't do that for them. And they're going to proceed into the building through whatever the normal side would be based on that fire, the alpha side, let's say, in this call, go up the stairs to where this fire is. And they build several pictures moving in, simulating how you'd go through the building and what you would see. And then as other units arrive, they see their own screens and go on scene with arrival. The incident commander would give them initial orders until you get a battalion chief that arrives on the scene, confirms what the first two or three crews are doing on their own, that the first arriving captain is coordinating while they're still part of the team doing initial attack, and then they take over command on the outside as additional units arrive to put all the pieces in place to cycle crews through when one is getting low on air, send them through to either recycle, which is a new term they're using, to say you're coming out, you're getting a bottle change, maybe you're grabbing a bottle of water, and then you're going back in for reassignment. And after two bottles, maybe three if the weather's decent, you're actually going to go to full rehab where you have to sit out a certain period of time, monitor your blood pressure and heart rate, get fully rehydrated before you're going back. And so you know you're going to miss one whole cycle of work because you need to come out and rest. And that's kind of the fundamentals of what they're doing, but with some standardized terminology so you can also shorten your radio communications. You say a couple small things, and it means things that everybody is used to. And we're basically setting up our fire ground the same way that we were before. It's just now our size up is going to be the same for everybody when we come on board. And it'll be done the same way, and the assignment will come at the right time in the size up for everybody. And then if you miss a piece that might be important, you can see that one of the other crews can prompt you on that. Hey, did you say, are we offensive on this or defensive on this? Because there's a specific time when you're supposed to announce your strategy in there and reaffirm it. So if a key thing is missing, you can try to help cover each other as well, too, at least in my mind. And that's the essence of what we're doing. I didn't put together a great outline to walk through it yet, but there's a lot of, I think before we get into the details, there has been a lot of fear over time about that blue card system. That's not NIMS compliant, first of all. And it truly is NIMS compliant right now. We're using all NIMS terminology. We're not using sectors, and that was the big separator. And then there was the fear of, well, I don't want to have to pay Brunicini to have all of our incident commanders be incident commanders because it's the Brunicini system, and this is how they're making money. And well, truth be told, any educational program that's out there, they have to cover their costs.
Sure.
And the amount of time it takes to build out a scenario where five arriving units will have a series of screenshots of how they'll work their way through the building to do fire extinguishment in their area, checking for extension, pulling ceilings, what do they see up in the ceiling. And so there might be 12 to 20 different slides for engine one. Assuming they get on scene, they do a standardized thing. But after their initial assignment is done, now what might they do? They might have three or four choices, and you need four or five slides to say where would they go after the BC gives them their second assignment when they're done. And it's really complex to build, and there's a lot of time and money built into that. So what our folks do is we go through the initial online and then the in-person training. We're going to send a few people away to become blue card instructors. We're going to send them out of here to get out of here. But there's an instructor training class coming up in Duluth that we're going to send four instructors to. So that way we can now do our own training in-house because you are required, once you get certified by blue card. So you're certified by this group, this consortium. It's not just the Brunicinis. There's a big group of folks around the Indianapolis area that really helped get this started along with Phoenix, and it's kind of started to branch out from there. And you get your initial certification. That's good for 3 years. You're required to get 36 hours of continuing ed in incident command training or incident simulations over that course of 3 years. And the idea is they're hoping that you'll do 12 hours a year.
Sure.
And so the way I think about it is it will force us as a department to focus on doing fire command training with our officers every year. And to get 12 hours a year, and we're not going to do it in one setting, so we're going to have to split it up into at least quarterly doing training with each other. So now we're not just seeing it once a year and then it gets dry and stale, because how many of our officers are actually establishing command, first of all, on a first arriving call? So it tries to keep those sets and reps good and fresh in your mind by doing 12 hours a year. And at the end of 3 years, you need to go through these same sim labs again. The scenarios will change and be different, but go through some performance-based training and experience to get recertified for another 3 years. And the amount of time it takes for you to do that, I think, would vary by institution about how much time you feel comfortable after the initial to do this. So for us, we're doing it over 2.5 days because we've never done it before. I'm assuming when we redo this, it takes a much smaller amount of time to run people through the 5 different types of buildings to say, yep, check me off, you're doing great. I don't know if that's 2 hours or 3 hours or a day. Yeah. We haven't been that far, but if we can train our own folks in-house, then our instructors need to pay a fee to stay current and to get access to the sim. So there's a cost associated with it, but over 10 years, we haven't taken the time as a department to put together our own program. We haven't built our own sims.
Right.
We don't have the time to do that. We started and then found out how much it takes. About 40 hours of work to put a 2-hour training session together to reuse, to have people argue about a bit, and then go back in and tweak. And that was just to get 1 2-hour training session. So for us to pay the money to have other developers put these together and continue to update them, make them available to us, it seemed like one way we can try to actually have officer training on the fire ground that would mean something. It's an organized program that people are doing all across the country in various departments. So there's some at least credibility and numbers to that, too, where you say it might not meet an IFSAC standard, but it meets a standard that a group of people have gotten together, developed over time. And a weird side note is I think in the state of Minnesota, they have adopted an IFSAC-based certification for fireground management that's supposed to also tie into Blue Card. So if we wanted to pay another $230 to the state of Minnesota, we could get another card. I don't know that we're doing that. Yeah. But maybe this over time turns into some type of a national standard on this is a way you can do fireground command. Sure. Not only provide training, but a little bit of liability reduction by saying we're not just shooting from the hip, we're following some standardized guidelines, and did we follow them out on this scene, and are we covering all of our bases?
I think it's anytime you can get fireground officer training is fantastic, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. Are you getting any pushback internally?
Good question. So there was a lot of skepticism up front, and we just completed day 2 of our 2.5 days of training. So I will say that after this is done, we have a lot of work yet to do. So if we went out and started to talk the way that we were taught today out on a fireground, a lot of our firefighters are going to be confused about what we're doing, sure, and what it means. And they'll probably be nervous about, I hear this word, but what the heck is up with recycle? That just means, come out, change your bottle, and go back in. When you're done, let me know when you're ready. We'll say the word recycle after this to mean that. So they just know, oh yeah, get out, you're going to go back in as soon as we can get you back in. And it'll freak out the dispatchers probably for a while, because if they start hearing different terminology and phrases being used when you first arrive on the scene, they're going to wonder, did I miss the training session on this? What's going on? And do they want me to be doing something now, sure, that they've said this? What? So we've got a lot of work to take a look at our SOGs and put some things in place, do some training with our staff before we go forward. But circling back to your original question with pushback, I would say that we did get pushback from some, and then we had skepticism from a lot of other folks. Hmm. And I felt very confident that this will help us with the problem that we have, and that our fire scenes are chaotic from one to another, and that two different incident commanders will do it totally differently. Not just little variations. We're not operating from fixed command. Almost nobody is using any type of an incident check sheet or documentation form. You know, we've gotten to the wild, wild west in our organization that you rely on people's skills just in their head like you would have 25 years ago, where it was common that nobody used any type of tools or aids to run a scene in our area. I had some skepticism in that I saw the details of the program. I think it would work for us. You are allowed to make some modifications to fit local terminology and stuff too.
Sure.
So it's not that we went through the training now, and if we catch you on a fire scene not using the recycle term and you say, hey, go get a bottle, change out, and come back in, that they'll revoke your blue cards, because that's not the case. But I was worried that we would put this in, we would have a lot of resistance, and we would have a hard time maintaining it after we established it, because some people will say, I'm just not going to say that part of it, and I refuse to say that part. And then thread by thread, you start pulling away at this big blanket that we've woven right. together to say, this is how we're going to keep ourselves all warm and happy at a fire scene. The next thing you know, the whole blanket's falling apart, and we're just sitting there, because that's what happened the first time we went through this. I've seen enough adoption, embracing of it by the people that have been doing training today that I don't think that's going to happen. I also went in it with a lot of faith saying, I don't know if the terminology is going to be right. And there was skepticism from folks on, this system is great, but we have two stations, we've got two engines and a battalion chief. What the hell are we going to do with two engines and a battalion chief that we need some kind of fancy organized system for?
Right.
Even if, and one of the instructors that came up, there were four instructors that came up from the Twin Cities area, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the suburbs, that are part of one big countywide coalition. There are a couple dozen departments that are now blue carded down in the Twin Cities. One of them was from the Richfield Fire Department that has two stations, two engine companies. Actually, they have three. They call them engine couples, which sounds like maybe they're heading out on a date for the night. I don't know. But basically, they're running three two-person engine companies to get the minimum six people that are on duty to have some flexibility to go to more than one incident at a time. And then as they're above their minimum staffing, they may have more than two people on that engine, but right. they kind of plan around that model. And they're doing the same thing we're doing, and they're using Blue Card, and they're working with mutual aid partners who will come in a few minutes later than their earlier arriving units, and they're seeing success with what they've been doing. And there are a couple of paid on-call departments that were in the area that we have an instructor up from there. And we're finding that, you know, more often than not, the suburban departments that are down there are two stations, three stations, and beyond that, there are a few that have five stations, but it's not as if people are coming with a Fargo model of having seven fire stations. You know, right. that's not necessarily the norm. And right. if you have a larger group, I think you probably maybe have a better chance of coming up with an organized way that you're running your fire grounds because of the number of resources that you have that you have to. And I could be wrong on that, but some of those folks are seeing the value in what we've been training about how we're doing this. That I think that's going well. We do have a couple of maybe our bigger naysayers who, well, this is a bunch of crap because, again, you're just buying Brunicini stuff and that's not here. Or, this is a bunch of crap because we don't need all this. We've run fire scenes fine before.
I think we've all heard those things in our lifetime on the fire service. I think it's important to do it often. You're going to see that once they get into a habit of doing it, I think that's when you'll see the benefits of it. We have a little larger department than you do, but we do run two apparatus to fire alarms, and they do the same thing when they arrive on scene as if we had a two-alarm fire going on with seven apparatus coming. And they constantly do that. That's the biggest thing, I think, and that's where you get into the habit of you know, establishing command and making your assignments. If you don't do that under non-pressure situations, you're not going to do it under pressure situations. So I'd recommend to you guys, that sounds great, and I'm glad you guys are doing officer training, but to now take those terms, mm-hmm. terminologies, and actions on every single run you go on, car accidents,
right.
You know, those things. And that's how you build those skills. So you can change the term if you want to rehab or recycle or on deck, I've heard that a couple times, you know, those things. That term doesn't really matter as long as you know what it means. And then mm-hmm. you continue with you're constantly using that term. Pretty soon that's going to break that objection, I guess I would say.
But it right. takes a while. And I think mm-hmm. there's a couple of big factors because we went through it mm-hmm. where we were using the individual company assignments. And we did not want to go away from that. We struggled with that. And I think it comes down to fear and unfamiliarity
yeah.
or lack of training. Mm-hmm. And so then it's upon the officer staff or the training staff to get people to that level where they're comfortable using it. But that's where that resistance, I believe, comes from, is people are afraid of it because they're not sure. They don't know how to do it. They're not sure about it. And once they learn it, most people that I've seen, I think you would mm-hmm. agree, Chris, that they actually like it better, and that's why we like it better too, because it actually works really well.
Yeah.
But just like you said, you practice it all the time so that when it's 3 in the morning and you're under pressure and things are crazy, that it's just second nature. But you need to practice it all the time, one, mm-hmm. to do that. Number two, the main reason we do it is because it sets you up to expand your incident. Because yep. not every incident you go to in your career is going to be the small room and contents fire.
Right.
We all think it will be. Trust me, I've been burned by it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Many other people have been burned by it. We all think, I know everything, you can't tell me. No, here's the bottom line is you will go to an incident that you never thought you would experience. And so then it sets you up to easily expand your incident and maintain control of it. Because if you don't set yourself up initially that way, you are screwed. I'm sorry to be vulgar, but you are behind the eight ball. And to catch up at an incident that is quickly growing and evolving, forget it. And,
right.
and so then you look stupid, your department looks stupid, people get hurt, etc. It right. unrolls on you, it snowballs on you. So if you go in set up for the big incident, and that's what you've practiced every time you go to an alarm, well, then you're set up for it, you're ready for it. And it doesn't mean that stuff still can't go wrong, but it's going to reduce the odds that it will.
Right, and when you are psychologically challenged by an incident that comes up, you are going to... you're going to revert back to default behavior.
Yes. Yep. And you look at you're a two station department. So if you have a relatively large fire, how many other departments and companies do you call in? How many people are there? Oh, a lot more than two or three, isn't
right.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
right.
So then you need this system in place, don't you? Because you, so it's that thinking ahead, thinking big, and being ready for it. It is my.
Right.
We
saw some initial success with doing a fairly simple size up upon arrival. Just indicating the number of stories and the type of building that you're at and assuming command and giving it a name. And their size up now is a little more complex at first, and they talk more about assignments afterwards in certain specific ways. But one thing that did remain after the training we did years ago was almost everybody always, when they get on the scene, announces, Engine One's on scene of a two-story apartment building. We got smoke and fire showing from the A side. Engine One will have 26th Street Command. That part comes out almost every single
sure.
time, because when they do show up to something that's actually on fire, if they're doing that at all, then nothing's showing, we're investigating, because we do the size up the same way. On the scene of a two-story home, nothing's showing, Engine One will... be investigating, and we'll have 11th Street Command. They've been doing that over and over again.
Right.
So then when the real incident comes out and there is something noticeable, that also spits out and they're not thinking about it. It
right.
comes out naturally. And otherwise, if they weren't doing it at the regular calls, it wouldn't happen here. They'd say, we got a working fire. Give me a callback or give me a second alarm. I don't. And we also have to reinforce when certain terminology changes, too. We instituted some alarm levels that will get us some automatic resources.
Mm-hmm.
It was arm-twisting for some folks to get them to use the term second alarm. I'm used to saying, give me a call back, call Salvation Army for rehab, give me an engine from Fargo. It's not all that complex,
right?
Right? But now if all of a sudden you're stressed, how many of those things actually come out? Because they only call from when we actually have a working fire. We've got three different shifts, two stations, a battalion chief and two captains on duty each day. Which of those three are going to catch each of those two or three maybe fires that each shift has over the course of the year, for being honest, like a
right.
real working fire where we're calling in a lot of folks.
Right.
And so what you'd find is you'd get on the scene, you'd do a callback. All right. And then like a minute and a half later, they go, oh, shoot, and I need an engine company from Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And the rehab piece gets missed. One of these pieces gets missed unless you've got a very simple, when you get on fire, if it's a working fire, call for a second alarm. That gets you the standardized resources. You can turn them back if you don't need them, but it's also a pretty small list of people we get on a second alarm.
Sure.
So you're not worried about, I don't want to call for 13 ladders and then have to turn six of them back because we only needed four ladders on this house fire.
There's a fear to call in more people than you need to, and I think one of it is it comes from just maybe machismo and so on. But I know I've had it for years where, especially when I was young and filling in, my objective in my brain for some reason was get there as quick as you can to cancel everybody. And that's really not. And over the years, as you mature, it's no. You need to get there safely and then address the situation that's there.
Right.
With the right amount of resources. But that's one of those things we've been training on the last couple of years, is that for our personnel, we're not saying you can't ever call for an individual company specifically, but mm-hmm. what we're trying to do is encourage them to use the alarm system, because the alarm system was built in a certain way to make sure you get the appropriate resources there. Because if you call for one engine company, you're missing a bunch of other things that you probably are going to need along with that. And so if you just strike the second alarm, they're all going to come. If you call for the one more engine company, you're going to get one more engine company, but you're not going to get all the other stuff that you, in a lot of times, you a lot of times need. And so it's easier to call for the alarm, and if they show up and you don't need them, send them back. But, and again, I'm not saying you can't. There are certain situations mm-hmm. where, hey, I just need another few sets of hands for
right.
10 minutes. That's different. But
then also from the chief on down, for those people that are on scene, those people that are responding, if they hear, give me a second alarm or give me a third alarm, and you know what those alarm assignments are, too. It also sets up the late arriving officers to know, okay, when I get there to help support the incident, I know that there is going to be another two engines and one more ladder truck showing up because that's our assignment or whatever that is.
Right.
And so instead of saying, well, I heard them call for this engine, I heard them call for that ladder, did they call for the other one? Oh, crap. And you don't know which engines, which other crews are already busy, and so which are coming for sure. But when you order an alarm level, then dispatch will get the number of engines and ladders and chiefs that you want from wherever they're available. So that also takes away from that incident commander or other arriving officers to have to figure out, did they call for engine 3? Did engine 6 show up? I think they might have called engine 6. You don't know if engine 6 was busy or not, but if they called a second alarm, I know I'm getting one more engine and a ladder and a bat chief or whatever your resource is. It shortens up the radio communications. Everybody's on the same page right away about who's coming. And if you've got a command aid there, or somebody shows up and they realize you called for a second alarm, but you've got your first three engines and a truck committed already, and you got two more, they need to cycle out, and we don't have the fire under control yet. We need a third.
Sure.
Because you already said second alarm, I like gives me two and one. That's not enough. Give me a third. The decision comes so much more quickly with standardized resource assignments.
And that's kind of the point of this whole thing, is the standardization and this. That's where it was nice that you kind of explained Blue Card, because, again, we've been visiting with you about this for a few months, I don't know how many months now, but knowing that you were doing that. But those were some of the discussions we had and concerns and questions, because I hadn't kept up with Blue Card and wanting to know, okay, well, I associate that with Brucini and right. Brunicini, and then also when it comes to grants and funding, the issues that so right. I think that's nice to kind of clear that up for everybody, too. That might be listening.
Yeah, there's one other big point of controversy in Blue Card, probably, and that element is still there, but it's not a mandatory element if you don't use it in your area. But another falling down point was having a crew be on deck versus assigning a crew to be RIT. And that's still a bigger fire service discussion of, should we be establishing one crew that their job for the whole duration of the incident, or unless they're reassigned, is to stand by with the equipment, be there ready in case there's another fire, but that's all they do at the incident? Or should we have another crew that's ready for another assignment or ready to do a rescue if they need to? Because if you're doing on deck, you should still be laying out all your RIT equipment somewhere next to that primary opening, or multiples if you've got multiple entry points at a larger structure, and that equipment's ready to be brought in if you need it. And there are two different schools of thought. Neither one of them is actually technically wrong. But one thing that, to get on the Brunicini bandwagon a little bit, is quite a number of years ago when they had a tragic fire death of one of their firefighters in a grocery store, the Bruce Tarver incident, they had a mayday occur, and it was in a grocery store. A lot of the grocery shelves had fallen over, and so it turned into like a hoarder grocery store, you know, where it was incredibly difficult to get that one firefighter out because they didn't have clear paths of travel and stuff. And what they also found is the RIT crew went in, if I'm not mistaken, to go to effect the rescue, and it actually took two operational cycles to get him all the way back out again. But also all the crews that were there in that area immediately diverted over to go help do the rescue. And some studies that have occurred after that and since then have also shown that typically when a mayday is called and a firefighter's down, the crews that are inside, if they're not doing something that's defending everybody else, they'll divert over to rescuing the firefighter, and I think they should. They're properly equipped and trained in most cases to try to help effect that rescue. And those RIT cases that are successful tend to be because their own crew or their crew and the next adjacent crew grabbed that firefighter and got them out, grabbed the crew that was in trouble, got them out of the trouble situation or out of the building. And that if you're waiting for a RIT crew to effect the rescue, the chances of success aren't nearly as great as if they can get rescued within 2 or 3 minutes by the crew that's there. But it spurs the debate about how do you set up for that or how do you not. But one of the things that it does do, regardless of whether you use RIT or not, is to say, okay, there are three crews operating at this apartment fire right now. One's on the first floor, one's on the second, one's on the third. One of them's hitting the fire. The other one's checking for extension on this other floor. And another one's working another silent, let's say. And if you have one crew that's on deck ready to go, whether you have RIT or not, that first crew that gets low on air, there's a crew at the front door, or there's a crew assembled outside the area ready to go in and back up that next crew that's getting low on air right away without taking somebody from staging. And they're ready to go in while that first crew comes out, does a quick bottle change, and is ready to maybe swap out from that second or third crew that's going in there. And so if you take away some of the fears about, well, if we do this on deck, then we're not NIMS compliant, we don't have two in, two out. But you can do RIT if you wish to do that and still do that too. So it kind of depends on what your resources are and what you feel comfortable with. But there are times that either one might be just as appropriate and might work to the fire scene. And also one of the issues we do have is not always forecasting and planning far enough ahead to have that next crew ready just a little bit before they're going to be needed, or have that crew that's non-committed because we've got our major things done. And yet when they're pulling ceilings in the third floor from a second floor apartment building checking for extension, we've got fire in the attic now. Okay, the crew that's on deck, they get their assignment, they go up to start supporting the fire in the attic. And maybe they're staging outside, maybe they're staging just outside of the alpha side if that's where they're going in or what have you. But you know, that's been another area of kind of contention. Y'all might have some feelings on that too.
I do have some feelings on it. I don't know how
the discussion's healthy, I think, of the pros and cons of both, because neither one of them is necessarily totally right or wrong on it.
So we've had both.
Yeah.
We've had RIT and we've had on deck over the my career.
Mm-hmm.
They're both important for safety of your firefighters. I think I want to stress that more than anything.
Yeah.
That's the whole main goal. I could care less about anything else except the safety of my firefighters, or if a firefighter is injured, to get them to safety.
Mm-hmm.
I get leery by not having a RIT assignment. And once again, I want to stress firefighter safety isn't my number one concern. My second mm-hmm. concern is if I didn't have a RIT component available for rescue, that we could be open to some liability, I would guess. I'm trying to be careful here mm-hmm. on what I say. Without being political, I guess, too political on this subject. But I do think by having a RIT team assigned, when I'm sitting up, God forbid something happens to one of our firefighters and something, you know, lawsuit comes out or something, and I have to go on the stand and say I did not have a RIT team there, it mm-hmm. would definitely show that I failed, I think. It also showed that I didn't care about firefighter safety. So that's why I've always been a RIT guy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying on deck. You can call it on deck / RIT. You can do whatever you want to call it. But I think you've assigned a group that's going to be designated for that thing. I agree with what you said earlier in the podcast about most rescues are done by their own crew or the crew that's near. And mm-hmm. I would definitely, if they can do it safely, I would definitely want all hands on board going after that individual that's injured. But to have that designated RIT company, or RIC, or whatever you want to call it, whatever right. term you're using, you know, this week, and I just think it gives you some protection outside of what we've talked about, the firefighter safety, those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my view of it. I think it's important. How do you do it with two engine companies, Jeff? I don't know. I don't know. And
yeah.
and RIT, and to be honest with you, RIT in my fires comes third, fourth, fifth on my agenda. You know, we were going after some rescues, we're doing some fire suppression,
right.
those things. But if I have a crew that's staged or something, I will bring them up, assign them RIT stuff. They'll also yeah. do me, you know, I the way we do RIT is they control utilities, they do a walk around, they give you some extra hands sometimes and some eyes. mm-hmm. which benefits tremendously also.
But sure.
It's just that, like I say, the most important thing is firefighter safety, and I'm concerned about our individuals. Second is, obviously, there's that liability yeah. at the end that we have to be concerned about also. And
I know when the pure base fire ground command system was being taught in various parts of the country, I think they're pretty adamant about RIT is not the best choice for us. Mm-hmm. And so we need to go with this purely on-deck model, too. That's sure. what we found is going to work, and that's it. And the blue card system, the way that it stands today, is RIT is a valid assignment. They may still emphasize that they feel on that on-deck provides more benefits, more advantageous, mm-hmm. but it doesn't stop you from saying if you wish to have a RIT assignment, make a RIT assignment.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. If your locality does certain things differently, but that's the standard in your area, you can use that and still do the same standardized size up, do the same parroting of communications back and forth, use some of the same standard terminology, but also change what you need that works in your area too. So you might call a ladder company a truck.
Sure.
Another one might call it a ladder. Another one might call it something else. But the system is not so scripted that it has to be only this way or it doesn't work. And it was a lot more scripted back in the early 2000s to say, this is the system. You got to buy into it.
Right.
But that doesn't work. It doesn't. I would guess that it probably didn't work for every organization in the Phoenix Valley when they were putting all that stuff together either. But as long as everybody knows what it means. One example we came across there during our training was, what do you call the thing that you probably have on your truck where you've got a 2.5-inch hose line with a gated Y, and then you probably have a preset amount of 1.5 or 1.75 hose attached to at least one, if not both, of the sides of that thing? And so it was called we had us and West Fargo that are training together right now, and then we had people from four other departments that were the instructors, and that thing was called a setback, it was called a pack, it was called a bundle, it was called the horizontal standpipe, and there's one other thing that somebody else called it. But in their area, they had three different terms for that in their various departments, and no department was willing to give up their thing, their term for terminology for it. So in my mind, I don't care what we call that frickin' thing if we all just had one name that we called it.
Right, you can call it Craig if you want.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter as long
but
as
then, yeah, it lays there, it doesn't do much, and every now and then you pull it off and hope that it works. But that was a really dry Craig joke. But I'm also a guy who I just really hate calling tankers tenders because it's not a big thing in Minnesota. We still call them all tankers, and that's what I grew up with. If there's a hard line drawn in the sand and somebody said, no, we're calling them all tenders in Minnesota, that's the way it is, all right, I would change. But sure. I would prefer to call the thing that I want to call it. Even in our department, we have two different groups that fight back and forth about. One group wants to call that thing a setback, the other one wants to call it the pack. Oh, that was another term, also calling it pack. Pull the pack. Who cares what it is as long as everybody knows what it is.
Right.
And in that area of the Twin Cities that the instructors came from, they just all train each other on what that terminology means in the different departments. They don't try to standardize it, they move on. They just say, sure. No, when I say this, I mean this. When you say that, you mean that.
Right.
And if either of us ask one or the other to pull it off of their engine, we know what we mean.
Right.
Or we know when they're pulling it off what's happening.
Or you can ask for more information.
Yeah.
What in the world are you talking about?
What do you mean, pulling the pack?
Yeah.
2.5 of the gated Y.
Because we probably got six packs on our truck. Packs are called six different things on our truck mm-hmm. sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So you want to make sure your terminology is correct. Or...
Oh, what about the Cleveland load? Can you even call that a pack or not? Oh, jeez. It's not the Cleveland load show, though.
But I think that the bottom line comes down to that you're addressing it.
Right.
Yeah. It's firefighter safety, like Chris said, and Rick, in my mind, probably is a little better, but I can see if you don't have as many resources that, okay, this is a way to still address it because you have that focus on firefighter safety. You have somebody focused on it, but the when you said this a few minutes ago, Chris, you talked about it's not my top priority or two, but it's down there, 3, 4, 5, wherever in there, but that's the important thing, is that, yeah, we need to get a fire attack going and rescues going. That stuff has to happen right away. We've got our life safety priorities, mm-hmm. Incident priorities. It's that follows in closely after that. That's the bottom line. That's the important thing. And I hear too often, well, we don't have the resources. We don't have the, like we just said, Well, what do you do when you guys have a fire? Oh, you do callbacks and you call for mutual aid. And second, so you do lines. End up with lots of trucks and people right. there. Oh, so you okay. do have the resource. Yeah. It's this, we get into a lot of times, and we're not a big department by any means. We're small. But I hear this so much in the fire service. We don't. That's easy for them to say. They're New York or they're L.A. They have hundreds of firefighters. Yeah, but what do we do in our rural areas? Yeah. We call in mutual aid. So you still are getting resources. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be there right away? Not necessarily. Are they always going to come? Not necessarily. But the bottom line is, if they do arrive, then those assignments are filled in that priority right. order.
How are you going to organize it? How are you going to keep track
yes,
of it?
Yes, exactly.
Are you going to do those things? Yep. And that's started from the moment the first apparatus arrives on scene.
Yep.
I think, Jeff, you look back at the original topic of it, and it's officer training.
It is, yeah.
And fire ground command stuff. And I think that's, I'm glad you guys are doing it. I think it's important. I think we could all do it all the time. We've been doing it for a while in our department, but, you know, refreshers is not a bad thing. And we try to, you know, I listen to the radio. I'm not always on the run sometimes, but I listen to the radio, and I sometimes have to pick up the phone and have a conversation with the captain that was there and just remind him of the process of being command and size ups and those things. Not too often anymore, though. I mean, really not. And the newer officers pick up on it a lot faster than the seasoned veterans who maybe have spent 20 years doing it a different way, and now it's thrown at them.
Yeah. Being systematic about it, yeah. Following a system, that you actually have a system. You talked about using cheat sheets earlier. My God, if you don't have a cheat sheet, how do you know for sure you did something? How do you know you didn't? It helps you keep accountability. And again, the whole reason for this goes back to, one, you're going to handle the incident better, so you reduce the damage to lives and property, but firefighter safety. Yeah. And so you want to keep your firefighters safe, and the best way to do that is for you to know what's going on, to be able to keep track of it for accountability purposes, what you've done, where people are, all of that stuff, and that requires doing things in a systematic way, just like we were talking about before you can't do Rick right away with your first crew there. But as you get more crews, when they show up, then at the appropriate time, that does need to be added in. That's part of the system. That is, whether you call it Rick or on deck or what, those systems get put in place.
And the reason behind them, what's the reason behind them? If you have Rick, it's for, you know, they're designated just for this task. If you have on deck, they are designated for maybe the next task plus Rick. You know, then if they move on, if they're on deck and they move up to an active position, mm-hmm. and you move engine 3 into on deck, you know, maybe just easily to address the concerns I have, you're on deck and you're Rick.
Yeah. Well, and like you were talking
you know,
about,
I mean, it continually
your Rick crew doing utilities, I always like to use my Rick officer as my safety officer until I got another safety officer there, because our safety officers are a lot of time our administrative personnel that don't get there for a while. Right. So in the meantime, to me, the Rick officer and the safety officer are doing the same thing. They're doing a walk around, looking at the situation, identifying where the crews are, what they're doing, any hazards, all of the same stuff, so he can play both roles until another person gets there to take just that role only. But eventually, like you said, as you move down the list and people come in, then that'll actually get separated out too. But yeah, you can combine some things as you need to. They, just like you said, they got to do the walk around anyways. Why not get the utilities?
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Along the terms of combining things, another change in the system here before we wrap things up is the system also used to be very specific about you were either in the offensive mode and you were inside, or you were outside and you were in the defensive mode, period. You could have a marginal attack where you might mix the two, but it was, you know, strongly discouraged. But come to realize, too, a lot of times the most effective way to resolve the incident is to actually put the flipping fire out. It doesn't matter whether you're putting it out from the inside or the outside or where exactly, or a mix of the both exactly. Right. But what a defensive fire means is we're not putting anybody inside.
Right.
Everybody's out because we got a concern about the life safety hazards of this building. An offensive attack can occur in any fashion, inside, outside. When I say a mix, there are times where you might come upon that garden level apartment where the fire is blowing out the lower level window, and you are going to go in and do an interior attack, but the first thing you're going to do is you're going to hit it from the outside first through sure. the window where it's blowing out to darken it down, absorb the heat, slow down the amount of fire advancement, so that way it buys you the time to then make your entry around from the unburned side, go in and finish putting it out. And, you know, 15 years ago, that might have been a no-no, first of all, tactically speaking, you always attack from the unburned side. And it might have been a no-no to say you never mix inside and outside attacks, and you kind of come to find out with controlling ventilation, pathway flow, and yes. fire development, this goes right along with that in the science of fire, in that if it's already self-ventilating, then you need to get at it now to stop it from expanding into further unburned areas. And if that means hitting it from the outside right. first and then going in to finish up, perfectly cool. That's all part of an offensive attack. You didn't mix anything. Mixing something would be you're putting up the towers and you're starting to squirt water in a defensive fashion while you still got people in the building trying to do an offensive attack somewhere. Like that's a big no-no.
We call it a transitional attack, and it's usually the first engine that does a transitional attack.
Mm-hmm.
That's a topic for a whole another show.
Yeah, Jeff. It's your Kendix. We can go in two or three different directions when it's right, when it's not, what the terminology is,
right,
and all that kind
right.
of good stuff.
I'm personally not against it, so I think the big situational awareness is the key to it.
I think the big focus here, I heard fog nozzles are making a comeback too, but anyways, the big focus here is that when it comes to incident command, that we are focusing on it. From a department standpoint, we are taking the time to focus our attention on the fact that we should have a standardized way that we're trying to teach and practice, that it's flexible enough to also take into account all the different fires and situations we get ourselves into, but that we're building enough muscle memory, repetition, and using the right tools so that things don't fall between the cracks. We can catch each other if we're making a mistake, and then when we're under high stress, we'll do the main things that we want to do all the time, so that we don't miss big things in there.
And you're going to, like I said earlier, I'm glad you guys are doing it, and I think it's very important, and every department should do work on this process themselves. But I think you're going to see, just a heads up, you're going to see some transitional issues. Just be patient.
Yeah.
Just be patient with the employees. And they want to do the best job they can, and that's important. And they will make mistakes like we all do. Wrong terminology. That's harmless
right.
for the most part. You know. So,
one of the instructors said their department's been working on this for 8 years now, and they are still working on it.
Right.
So they haven't achieved perfection. They're still continuing to try to get all the elements the right way. And in and amongst all of this, they are still having new members that come in mm-hmm. and old members that retire out. So it's not a great. We've got it. It's down. It's done. This is a continual process. And there are a couple of different times that they suggested some ways of doing, like you had said, kind of a transition period between what you're doing now and what you'd like to get to, but in an intentional way. So modifying some terminology, but not all, or modifying the written on deck, kind of mixing the two to begin with for comfort levels of saying what works and what doesn't. But that, again, could be a topic for another
right.
show.
I mean,
so.
That's a whole another show. I'm not sure about transitioning terms in. I think sometimes a drop-dead date is a nice move to pull off. And if most people are like me, and I assume they are, that if you tell me that Friday we're doing it this way, my head is in that SOG, and I'm practicing myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm practicing with my crews. I'm gathering as much information as I can prior to that Friday because I want that to go smoothly, and I don't want to look dumb. You know, I mean, that's true. You know, you want to look like you know what you're doing, and I think that's very important, not only for yourself but for your crew and for the citizens of the town you protect. They expect the top-notch organization, and you got to get on that stuff.
Sure.
You got to do those things.
Well, I don't know what you got planned for the rest of the night here, but if you had the time, we could talk about reinforcing command positions, the need of a safety officer versus division supervisors. Do you need a command aide or not? Or we could save that maybe for a future topic, like six shows from now.
Yeah, we probably should wait on some
okay.
of that.
That's
I do. We do need a battalion chief driver. And
yes.
the number one fire ground priority always is the public information officer.
Oh.
I think we forgot about that one.
If they could arrive first and try to impart the right safety message right after the fire breaks out, maybe it would resolve itself.
Right.
Right. Okay, well, PIO is set for next week's next episode. I have no idea what we're talking about next episode. But we do appreciate you kind of tuning in, joining in with the discussion, and maybe it'll stimulate a little conversation back home, too, about some of these issues. The talk helps a lot, helps you kind of point your focus in directions that you need some attention to. So, thank you for joining us again for another edition of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Have a good night. Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Tailboard Talk. Don't forget to tune in each week, Monday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Check out our educational programs and consultation services. They're all available at tailboardconsulting.com. There you can find links to all of our shows and our magazine articles. Thanks for listening, and join us again next month for another episode of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Is that our new thing now? Bye.
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 See ya.
See ya.
We got one battalion chief that ends his meetings with cool beans.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.